I have a guitar man in the studio with me this afternoon. I'm very pleased to welcome into the studio live on Cambridge 105, Glenn Eastoe. Glenn, good afternoon.
Hello there.
And you're from the Simpletone.
I am indeed, yes.
And the reason we've pulled you in is because you're entering the Cambridge band competition.
Yep.
So where's everybody else then?
Well, they've sort of deserted me. I don't really know what's happened. perhaps they've probably chucked me out of the band, actually. They're probably off...
Not got round to telling you.
Rehearsing somewhere with a new lead singer or something, and I'm here sort of, you know, moonlighting on my own.
So is that that's your normal position within the band, is it? You're the lead singer?
Yeah, I am, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
How long have the group been together?
We've been together since, I think it's... 2009 we started.
Oh right, so this is some while. Yeah,
it's been quite a while now. It hasn't felt like that long though. It's been great.
Is this the original lineup?
We did have another guitarist actually, so it's changed ever so slightly.
Okay, so what's the current lineup then?
For the better.
Do we hear from the old ones?
No disrespect to him. He's a good guy. But the current lineup is me singing. It's a four-piece. There's Johnny Davison on guitar, Craig Seymour on drums, and Alex Aprigliano on bass.
Okay, and how did you all meet and how did you get together?
School, really.
Wow. Okay.
Me and Craig went to school together. We were in the same year. I kind of knew Alex, who was a couple of years above us. And I was kind of writing songs on my guitar for quite a few years before we formed the band. I just sort of needed some other instruments to bring my songs to life, as it were. I'm by no means a one-man band, so I just sort of recruited my friends to help me out.
Are you a very musical person? So, you know, when you were writing these songs, did you kind of have in mind all the other pieces that were going to go to make the song complete, or do you kind of rely on other people's skills to bring that in?
It's like a collective, really. I mean, I kind of envisaged what I wanted it to sound like, but the guys they sort of polish a turd, really.
Nicely put. And where would you get your influences from? What sort of stuff do you like?
All sorts, really. I think as a group, we're influenced by lots of different styles of music and lots of different bands. Ranging from, like, you know, 70s sort of blues influenced rock, The Doors, The Beatles, right up to sort of Black Sabbath and, you know...
Oh, crikey, there's a range
Nirvana
then.
And yeah, exactly.
Do you tend to stick to fairly similar styles of songs when you're playing, or do you try and do the whole gambit?
Yeah, every song we play is sort of stays within the realms of what we do, but... You can sort of distinguish every single song. Every single song's slightly different, you know?
Right.
It's not always the same. I mean, they're the worst kind of bands. I hate to watch a band and every single song sounds exactly the same, you know?
You know when you put the album on and you think, oh, I really love this first track, and then you realise by track four you've started talking to other people and nodding off.
You think
it's all a bit the same.
On our first album, I mean, there's something for everybody on it. I mean, every single song is pretty much different.
And is this your first album that you brought in with you?
It is, yeah. It's for you, actually.
Oh, cheers.
It's a present.
Thank you very much.
You wasn't expecting that today,
I wasn't.
Was
no, it's worth coming in. Tell us about that one. How long has it been around?
We released this in March 2012, and it is called Rampenny, and we actually recorded it in Cambridge at Zoo Audio.
Right.
We're currently working on our second one. So.
Okay. And have you done much in the way of gigging and stuff like that, live performances?
We have. We've played all over the place, you know, London, Bedford, Cambridge, Huntingdon, and obviously St Neots, where we live.
Right.
We played the Cambridge Rock Festival last year.
Wow.
Which was quite a good experience for us.
You were on the BBC stage there?
That's it, yeah. Yeah, so the BBC introducing stage.
That was a good gig to get, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was great. It was great. Great fun. Really enjoyed it. Tent was packed, there was loads of people in there, it was brilliant, really good experience.
Now, is that the first time you've done a sort of real, a sort of stage, a variety type performance like that with several bands in the course of an evening?
I guess so, yeah, that's the biggest stage that we've done that kind of thing.
So is that good training for this coming Friday then, with the Cambridge band competition?
Yeah, I would say so, yeah, definitely. Yeah.
Did you all get on alright, you with all the other bands, or did you tend not to see each other?
Yeah, other bands can be kind of funny sometimes.
Yeah.
There's a little bit of sort of rivalry there, you know?
But, it's going to happen, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. Yeah, yeah, naturally, of course.
All right, well, look, let's warm up the strings and put this thing through its paces. I'm looking very enviously at your guitar sitting here. Okay. You play it so effortlessly, but I was just comparing my hands to yours, and your fingers are about three times longer than mine. No wonder I'm having trouble playing the guitar.
They are, yeah. I should probably play the piano or something.
I was going to say, they are very long fingers. Let's see how you do. Tell us about this first song.
This first song is an old song of mine, and it is on the album, actually. It's called Dreams of Yesterday.
Okay. Very nice.
Thank you very much.
Excellent. Sorry, one person clapping sounds a bit sad, but there's no one else in the studio. But so yeah, that's
a
really
not unusual, though.
No. When did you write that?
A long time ago, actually. Yeah,
really?
It's probably one of my first ever songs. So
wow,
and it's been played lots and lots and lots.
Well, and as I say, yeah, to put that on the album, but presumably over 4 years, as you say, you've written probably an army of songs.
Yeah, yeah. We felt that, like I say, we sort of mixed the album up, and that was sort of one of the lighter tracks that we decided to put on there. There's a couple of sort of light acoustic ballads like that one.
It's a lovely track. So let's look forward to Friday evening. It's yep. round three, Indeed. Or heat three, of the Cambridge Band Competition 2013. The big prize, of course, is to play at Strawberry Fair.
Yes.
Is that really what you're in it for? That's going to give you. It's going to give you some good publicity
and
if you
the
can.
Girls.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah.
I'm sure we could probably arrange them for the Portland Arms. You know, if they know you're going to be there, you'll be fine.
No, in all seriousness, yes, that is exactly what we're in it for. I mean, it's sort of notoriously difficult for bands to get in there to play Strawberry Fair. We've tried in the past and failed, so this seems like a good route to playing it, yeah.
Okay, so as with all these things, wherever there's competition and draws, how do you feel you've been drawn? You're up against Chasing Melfina. Well, we've had some experience of them here on Cambridge 105. Not sure if they're going to get aired on Friday, given what I heard last time. You're up against Screen People and Cemetery Junction. Have you come across any of these before?
I've never come across them, but... I had a little listen to them. I checked out the competition.
Right.
You know, I was having a little look, a little spy online, and there's some good stuff there. So it should be an interesting battle.
Has that influenced what you choose as your set?
No. I think we're just going to go there and sort of, you know, play how we normally do and hope for the best. God, I sound like a football manager, don't I?
It does have that feel. But in a way, it is exactly the same, isn't it, as the World Cup and everything else. If you're drawn in a group, it depends what you're up against, doesn't it, really?
This is it. You just got to play to the best of your ability and hopefully knock the other people away.
Well, and it's quite good in that you're being judged by judges rather than by audience reaction. Do you think that's... I mean, I personally...
Definitely, yeah. That was the most appealing thing about it, actually, because those sort of, you know, Battle of the Bands competitions where... It's based on audience votes. That seems like a little bit of a sort of money spinner to me. The more friends you bring, you know, the easier it is to get through, no matter what you sound like. And that's pretty bad, in my opinion. But
and I'll take your point. I think it is right. Well, I mean, I wish you luck with it. Are you going to give us another tune before you go? And then we'll talk about websites where people can find out more about you, because this is sounding really rather good. And it's only 25% of the group in tonight. I mean, if the other three turn up, you're on a winner, aren't you?
Yeah, I don't even normally play guitar either, so...
You're doing very well. I've been watching you with your C's and your D's and your G's.
Yeah,
I've been...
nice and easy. keep it simple.
What's this one called?
This one is called Heaven Knows.
Okay.
Today. try. Seems like we're contraband. Heaven knows, oh, heaven knows. Heaven knows, oh, heaven knows. Heaven
The Simple Tone. Well, Glenn, The Simple Tone.
Thank you.
That's an excellent song.
Thank you very much.
Very powerful songs. And again, one of your compositions?
Indeed, yes.
Very good indeed. All right, so good luck for Friday. We'll be broadcasting live on Cambridge 105, so all the team will be down there rooting for everybody. So there's yourselves, Chasing Melfina, Screen People and Cemetery Junction all up for the coveted place in the final.
Can't wait.
Do you know where, do you know which one up you are? I mean, on this list it says, you know, it's like 1, 2, 3 and you're number 2. I'm not sure if that's the running order or
I
not.
I think it is the running order, actually. Yeah, I think we're second on. So
are you happy with that?
I'm happy with that, yep.
Better than first, or would you have rather have gone first?
Anywhere's good. Anywhere's good for me. Yeah, anywhere, really, it doesn't matter, as long as we're in there.
Yeah, excellent. Well, listen, good luck with it. Thank you very much indeed for coming in today. If people want to find out more about you, websites and that sort of stuff?
They can go to thesimpletone.com, and there's links on there to our Facebook page, our SoundCloud page and our MySpace page, so thesimpletone.com.
Okay.
You can also find our album on iTunes, which is called Rampenny.
I'm looking forward to bunging that in the CD player on the way home. I've loved the couple of tracks you've played for us this afternoon, Glenn. Thanks
for
coming.
Much, yes.
Looking forward to hear the full orchestral versions on the on the CD.
It's a shame we couldn't put strings on it, actually.
But... Oh, I'm sure somewhere along the line you will. So there we go. That's The Simple Tone. They're up on Friday in Heat 3 of the Cambridge Band Competition. We wish you all the best. Glenn, thank you very much indeed for coming
in. Thanks very much.
Well, I'm delighted to welcome into the studio this afternoon Annabel Hayward. Now, Annabel is an associate, an experienced family lawyer stroke mediator at Taylor Vinters. You'll know their place at the top of Cambridge, up by the Science Park and up there. Annabel, good afternoon to you.
Hello.
I'm going to just turn your microphone up a little bit so we can hear you. Right. Tell us a bit, first of all, about your role within Taylor Vinters and what it is you do.
I'm an associate in the team. I've been there about 10 years and I specialise in family law issues, in particular those affecting unmarried couples, but I also deal with divorce on a day-to-day basis and splitting the money and helping sort out the kids.
My goodness. Can I ask you a personal question? You're married yourself?
I am.
How can you do that with all this misery, right? Is it as bad as it seems? You know,
I think it makes you fight even, find even harder to keep, you know...
Your own unit together.
Yeah.
You must see every range of everything.
Yeah, you do see a bit. Nothing surprises me anymore.
Okay. What made you get into this? Is it a passion of yours?
I enjoy the interaction and the, you know, the legal aspect was really interesting. And it's, you get to know your clients, you have a good, you know, build up a good relationship with them and see them out the other end.
I can imagine. They must need a helping hand at times just to hold.
Yeah.
Just someone who's been there before can walk them through the situation.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Okay, you're going to be coming in fairly regularly on the programme. And when you decided that you'd start with cohabitation. Now, we're having a little chat about this earlier. The myth of the common law husband and wife.
Yes, because I think people know so little about that. I thought that would be a helpful start.
Well, I mean, there's an awful lot of it about, isn't there? I mean,
there is.
I'm substantially older, I would guess, than both of you two. But back in my day, you left home and you went and got married. And yet I said to my own children, if you think for 1 minute I'm paying for a wedding, you go and live with them for a year first. If you still like them at the end of a year living with them, then I'll pay for a wedding and things like that. And I think there is far more of this trying things out, trying relationship out now.
Right.
But presumably then there's some real pitfalls to doing this. There's things you've got to watch.
Yeah, I mean, I think first of all, the trend is so clear out there. In the last 7 years, cohabitation has doubled.
Really?
There are now, actually, I couldn't believe it, the ONS, the statistics, the Office of National Statistics, said 27% of 25 to 34-year-olds are cohabiting.
Really?
Which is a massive amount.
Would you say that's simply because people now, because obviously rents and new house prices are so high, people who are going into houses and renting together are doing so simply because they seem it is an easy option?
Yes, partly so. And the flip side of that is marriage is on the decline, though, so they're not all necessarily going on to marry. Can't afford it.
You speak to a lot of your generation, Stuart. But
yeah.
People just, you know, it peeves me to say it, but they just don't seem to believe in it anymore, do they? Life's
the people. There's no need. I hear so many people say, what's the point in the piece of paper? What does that do?
Yeah, I mean, it's always like a bit of a sort of hippie way of thinking of it, maybe. But, you know, if at the end of the day, if two people love each other, and granted, love might not necessarily last forever, but still, it sometimes that's enough.
But legally, there are so many different, you know, so people say the piece of paper doesn't make much of a difference, but it
does. But to
so
you guys,
does.
it really does.
Yeah,
so talk us through some of these things that people think. Because when you go into this, it's rarely ever truly an equal relationship, is it? Quite often, two people get together, but...
And it may start that way. It may be easy that way. That they're both on similar incomes, perhaps. There are no kids. They can both put a smaller amount down, say, to a property. But things very quickly change as that relationship evolves and perhaps a child appears.
So what sort of pitfalls are we looking at?
Well, I think the first problem is people just are confused about the law. They don't know where they stand. So 58% of people surveyed recently thought there's still a common law husband, is this common law marriage. So they're going into it thinking that over time the law will do what's fair. So if the relationship does last, well, someone somewhere will adjust it later down the line, and as you would in a married situation. But I'm afraid there is no law for cohabitees at all. So when you're having to unravel it later down the line, you're relying on property law, trust law, whatever the statute, makes it much more complex. So when you say what are the pitfalls, that's what you might find yourself getting into, and unless you're clear about it from the start as to where you stand, that can become a bit of a minefield for people.
Yeah, we're not just talking, presumably, we're not just talking about couples when they split up. Your partners can die, can't they? I
mean,
and can that leave you equally exposed?
Yes, because under the, you know, if you die without a will, you haven't made provision in a will, then I'm afraid, again, the law's much more limited for cohabitees. There's no intestacy law provision that will automatically provide for your cohabitee. They'd have to actually make a claim for provision if they've been left out, and that's quite tough. So again, just thinking all these things through at an early stage, and again as the relationship goes on, because, you know, at an early stage when you're 20 something that may not be on your mind, but by the time you're a bit older and you've had children together, you need to perhaps be just reviewing things. And should we be putting things down in writing? Should we be thinking about making sure that there's provision in a will?
Do we both
understand where we'd be left if somebody died, if we split up, etc., etc.?
There is this great belief in a lot of youngsters that, I don't need to make a will yet. But I mean, you never tell me. I made my first will at about 22, I think I was, in those days you did. I had a house, and as soon as you have a house, right, you better think how you're going to deal with it. But people think, if I make a will, it means I'm going to die sooner. And is there kind of that same feeling again with cohabitation that it's like putting a curse on it?
It's almost too formal. I suppose the problem, that's maybe the reason people don't want to get married. They don't want to put that formality around it, but that's fine as long as they understand from the outset what they're getting into. And if one party's putting in more money, say, particularly when you're buying property together, that's what's crucial. If you've bought jointly, more often than not, you may well, over time, one of you puts more money in, one of you inherits, and again, or you move on and buy another property together. You just need to set that out and be clear as to where you both stand.
So almost in some ways then, people will say nowadays that they don't want to go through the formality and stuff, but at the end of the day, sometimes once you've got the formality out of the way, that's going to make things easier for you in the long run.
Yeah, it's as if you were buying a house with a friend, you wouldn't think of not putting, making it clear as to what you both own, effectively.
Sure, but I mean, you're down the pub and you decide you're going to move in together or you're going to cohabit with a friend or however you do this. Can you just scribble it on a bit of paper and go, that's okay, because look, I'll tell you what, I'm putting in, I've got 10 grand in spare old premium bonds, but you've got a settee and a telly. So we'll just sign this bit of paper that says, that's my telly and my settee, and then you agree that that's my 10,000 quid. Can you just do that?
Well, at least you're having the conversation for a start, and that's the first thing. Yeah, that's right. Good. Because actually, some people don't even have that, and I see so many people who just haven't even. There's no evidence of a conversation even. So at least you've done that. But if you're buying property, it really needs to be by deed to make it effective and formal in the event that things go wrong and you need to unravel it, because that's what the court will need evidence of. They'll need evidence as to what you both intended.
If you're getting a mortgage, does this sort of advice and help come from the mortgage lenders? Do they insist on this sort of thing?
I'm banging the drum. I try, and I'm trying to get round to those, the property lawyers, because, again, they don't always, we need to, the family advisors and the property advisors and the mortgage advisors all need to work in conjunction, because I hope people need to get that message.
I very recently come out of university, and I've done my whole student house share of things. Mm. And one of the things we did when we first moved into our rented house was we went around the place and we took photos of things as they were as we moved in, so that when we moved out, no one could try and fill us about with our deposits and things. Mm-hmm. Is this something that couples or people moving in together could do as well, and then incorporate that sort of kill two birds with one stone?
Yes, absolutely. You can put whatever you like into. I'm doing increasingly what we call living together agreements.
Right.
And in those, you can cover how you intend to own your house, in your property, or you may be renting, what you want to do with all your contents and that sort of thing, what you want to do if somebody dies, what you want to do if somebody splits up. You can cover all of that, and it's quite a simple agreement, which is in effect a contract between you, which will then, if it's entered into formally, provided one of you've not forced each other into it, and importantly, really, you both want legal advice, because when you're signing up to a contract to say that's how you intend to own.
So if a couple were coming to you, are you saying actually they shouldn't come as a couple? They should.
Yeah, they need
one
to be
should,
independent.
One should come advice, to you, and someone else should get their own solicitor.
Yeah, really, yeah.
And do you?
They don't have to both take advice, but that would be what I'd recommend. I'd be advising one. And then the other just needs somebody to read over and just make sure that they understand the implications.
Well, because at the end of the day, you are going to wind up in front of a judge, presumably, or you can quite often
that
wind
can
up in
happen.
Front of a judge.
That can happen. I mean, I'll just give you an example of a case that recently came to court. It went all the way to the highest court in the land. It was a Patricia Curran, I think, Curran and Collins, and they bought together jointly. So that was easy. Both decided it was going to be 50-50 from the start. Then they had a child together. 10 years later, they split up. He moves out and goes and buys another property. She stays there and carries on paying the mortgage. He's paying child maintenance. That goes on for about 10 years. Then 10 years later, he says, can I have my 50% share out, please? And she says, wait a minute, that can't be fair. Surely when you moved out, it all changed. But that case went all the way to the Supreme Court and cost them, I'm afraid, thousands, tens of thousands.
I was going to say, thousands,
over what
yes.
was probably a £350,000 property.
Is that right?
For the court to decide whether or not they did adjust their shares, because the title document said it was 50-50.
Yeah.
So he was right in many ways to say that. but the court had to decide. And actually, in the end, it did come down on what I would say was the fair side, that her chair was adjusted. But the message, I think, to get out there is it took them to go to the Supreme Court to get that decided. The law was so unclear, the court really had to push the boundaries to get a fair outcome.
And in doing this, have they now set precedent?
No, I'm afraid you've got to argue your case. So if Curran and Collins had, when they split up, that 10-year period where she stayed in the house, if they'd said, right, what do we intend now? So it's actually even during, you know, the ownership of a property, it can change. If they documented it, it would have been no problem at all. That would have been done.
Oh, my goodness.
it's just a salutary lesson.
105 Drive with Neil Whiteside.
Okay, and in the studio we've got Annabel Hayward from Taylor Vinters. I do pronounce it right. It is Vinters.
It is.
Thank goodness for that.
So many people say Vinters.
Well, I got it right. That's one in my favour. Okay, so let's just recap about some of these myths to do with cohabitation. One which actually did bite me on the bum years ago, and I hope to God the lady concerned isn't listening. I don't think she will be. But was that I owned my own house, and I had a girlfriend who actually started living there. And after 5 months and 3 weeks, I thought it's about time she left, because I wasn't too sure about this. And I was pretty damn sure that after 6 months she'd have had rights.
Yeah, and so many people think that. Well, she didn't.
Is that right?
I'm afraid not.
This is
the myth, the common, 58% of people still think wrongly that people will acquire rights as soon as you live together. So I have people, you know, countless people who come in and say, surely my friend told me that after 2 years that I'd have to pay her maintenance, or after a period of time. And that's just not the case. When you live together, in contrast to marrying, you haven't got a duty to support the other person. So there's no right to maintenance. So your ex-partner would have had no right to claim support from you.
Right.
And you can't tap into the claims that you can when you're, you know, married and then you go on a divorce, such as for property, adjusting property, or a lump sum or provision.
And pensions. It's the big one, isn't it?
You can't do any of that. So if you want to make provision, you have to set it out. And if you don't, it's also a good idea.
And this whole thing about...
It's the reason, I better just explain why it's also a good idea to set it out, even if you don't want to make provision. Because the cases that I see are where, as a result of innocuous conversations during the relationship, one party thinks that they've been promised the earth and that they'd have never done X, Y, and Z if they didn't think that they were going to be entitled to something. And it's those sorts of things that can actually later give rise to somebody making a claim against property. So whilst there's no automatic claim, and the court can't necessarily divvy up assets just to achieve fairness, they can. Their assets can still be attacked.
You can still build a good enough case.
You can. It takes quite a lot of evidence, but people can bring nuisance claims, and that's what we see. And again, if you just set it out, and I've done it, I'm increasingly doing living together agreements where, like you, it's my property. You can live here for as long as you like. As long as I say you can live here, but that's the end of it. And if you're paying, you're paying effectively a rent. You're not entitled. You're not going to now suggest that because you've contributed £X a month, you're entitled to something. So that's helpful just to set out.
Okay, I mean, I think we've pretty much established, and Stuart, I can see it in your eyes. Like, as soon as you meet a girl now, it's going to be...
I'd like to see your papers, please.
You are going to have this laminated
guide. It takes the romance out of it, doesn't it?
Yeah. that's the trouble with people, isn't it?
And it's the same with prenups. People don't really,
But no, it's fine for me. I've always been a sceptic anyway, so I would never enter any things with the rose-tinted glasses anyway. But it's always good to know.
Really? Because I think blokes fall in love far easier than women. But I just think men just... you were saying earlier, Annabelle, about people saying, oh, you promised me the earth. Yeah, I can imagine that.
Lots of people, I don't want to be too gender-specific, but so lots of people say, I thought we were going to get married. Always assume we were going to get married, and 20 years later... I've still not been asked, and now I've got nothing. And again, that was recently a case where that happened. A couple ran a cattery or kennel business, and again, it had to go all the way to the Supreme Court. But she said, we'd lived together 20 years. I supported you in your business. And she couldn't prove, actually, in that case, she couldn't prove that she'd acquired an interest in his business and his assets.
My goodness.
So she walked away with nothing, which is quite tough.
We've established that this is a good idea, then, that to get something written down is a good idea. But are we talking thousands and thousands of pounds?
It doesn't need to be. It can actually be quite a simple document, and it can range from anything really, 500 to a couple of thousand, depending on the assets at stake. But what I do is I generally have a one-off meeting with people, sort of flag up the issues that they need to go away and talk to their partner about, decide between them what they want to do, and then I can document that for them formally. And I'd recommend that they the other party goes to see a lawyer just to run it past.
And at that point, does it become like divorce, where suddenly two lawyers have got differing, you know, can you start to bicker over the terminology? Can it get drawn out that way? Is that a danger?
It could potentially, but actually I find people welcome it. You know, I think if they flagged it up at an early stage, it shouldn't come as any surprise, and it can be quite reassuring for both of them to know where they stand.
Yeah.
And also for the one who's on the end of the living together agreement, who's not got the assets, they can sometimes flag up issues that the other one might have not thought of, such as, you know, are you just going to chuck me out if, you know, what happens if you die?
Yes.
These sorts of things, and children, and you know, what happens to the children? All these things that we can cover off and talk about.
Okay, if people want to find out more, they can get in touch with you.
They can indeed.
How do they do that?
They can contact me at Taylor Vinters, or email, find us on the...
you haven't got the phone
Taylor
number,
Vinters,
have you?
I have, 01223 225147.
Okay, that wasn't the one I've got on my screen, but that's fine.
423 444.
Yeah, that'll be the one. Excellent. And your email, do they just email in a general information? If they go to your website,
there's a contact form there.
And that's the best way. And the website is taylorvinters.com, according to mine. So
that's the one.
Taylor, TAYLOR, Vinters, VINTERS.com, taylorvinters.com. And now it's not just yourself, you've got a colleague coming in as well.
I have, Claire Brackley.
Okay, and does she specialise in the
same? She does. She's another associate in the team, so there's four of us in the team, and she'll be told we need to decide what we do. There's so many issues, and we'd be interested to hear from people actually if there are particular things that they'd like a bit of help on. Or
you said to me off air that obviously anybody who's listening thinks, oh good, you know, I need to talk to you've got to be obviously a little bit careful, because you can't comment on ongoing cases and
That's
things
right.
like that, can
That's
you but
right.
people can email general questions in, and we'll pass them through to you. So if you've got a question for Annabelle or any of the team, just send them to us here, studio@cambridge105.fm, or if you're really lazy, you can just text it and we'll make it into an email, but please don't ring it through, because it will never make it in translation. Annabelle, it's been lovely to meet you.
And you, thank you.
It's probably going to be Julian next time, so but you know, he's all right. He's a bit better at this than me, isn't he, Stuart?
Yeah, about the same.
It's the journalist in him.
He's a journalist.
Six, and I'm joined in the studio now by Janine. Janine, you're the new drama teacher. I'm ever so sorry, your name has just slipped off my screen. I don't know your surname. I'm ever so
sorry. Hornsby, Janine Hornsby.
Okay, Janine. And you're the new drama teacher at the Manor School in Cambridge. I've been referring to it as the Abbey School, and I do apologise.
It's not the Abbey School.
I'm having a little
The
word.
Manor School.
I should be speaking to Mr. Clover directly.
Yes.
It's had a bit of a jaded past as far as drama's concerned.
Yeah,
hasn't it?
I think the school's got a bit of a negative reputation, which is kind of unfounded, because there's a lot of good things going on. The drama department has had a tough time, with changes of teachers and things, and a lot of shows have been started which have never really gone on stage. I think the students have become a little bit sort of disheartened by that and stuff, so we want to make the next show amazing.
Because it is really tough, isn't it? You've got to persuade kids to stay behind after school. My own son's at Comberton, he does drama, and I just seem to be permanently dropping him off and picking him up. It does take a commitment, doesn't it?
Absolutely. And we've had rehearsals every single day after school and every single lunchtime.
Wow.
Yeah.
So how long have you been with the school?
I've been at the school officially since the start of the year, so January.
Yeah?
Yeah.
And you've sort of come in and hit the ground running, have you?
Absolutely.
So what did you decide to do? How did you decide to tackle a problem like that?
Well, I just thought that, you know, since the kids haven't had a lot of drama stuff happening, it would be a good idea to do the biggest show possible.
Really?
Yeah, and I'm really, really, I'm pushing the boat out, I think, a lot. And yeah, it's been hard work, but really it's going to be quite good.
So what did you decide to do?
We decided to do a musical for Easter. We're calling it Best of Broadway. It's a collection of songs from Broadway shows. So
not just having to learn one style, one genre, because you can. I mean, if you do We Will Rock You, you can kind of get into the style of Queen, and it's fairly easy to get the knack of it after. You decide to do all the different genres and all the different stuff.
And it's a lot of costumes, and it's a lot of lighting, and it's a lot of commitment, and some of the songs are really, really difficult.
And have the school, have the pupils picked up on this? Are they, you know,
they've been fantastic.
Really?
Yeah, they've learnt the numbers really quickly. I'm actually quite shocked at how quickly they've picked it up and how well they've done.
And what year ranges are we talking about here?
From year 7 to year 11.
Wow.
Yeah, and I mean, the year 11s are so stressed. They've got so many revision classes and catch-up things and coursework and stuff, but wherever they can, they're stealing time to come and learn things, and they've been fantastic.
Okay, and we've got a couple of the young ladies from year 10 in this afternoon. We've got Susie and George. Good afternoon, ladies.
Hello.
Okay, so had you been involved before Janine joined? Had you been involved in any of the drama productions that never saw it to stage?
I was in one, two, maybe, but not.
There hasn't really been anything.
No. So when Janine came along and said, "Okay, going to do Best of Broadway," did it inspire you, or were you a little bit worried?
Quite excited, really.
Yeah.
Yeah, we really wanted to start doing something,
because we'd only just got back into sort of performing and that, so we really wanted to do something else because missed it.
Do either of you perform sort of outside the school? Are you in any other clubs or groups or anything like that?
Not really. No.
So school is your only opportunity to do it?
Yeah.
Yeah? And, musicals, is that the thing? Is that a good thing to start with? Or was it all straight acting? Was that more the...
It's probably more musicals, the whole singing and a bit of acting, really.
Yeah? And you've auditioned, you've got your roles, or have you? Everyone knows what part they're supposed to be playing. Yeah. What parts are you playing? Give us your favourite ones out of the all the things you're doing.
We're doing quite a few things, aren't we?
What are your favourite songs?
Oh, that jazz, I would
and
say.
For Good as well.
Yeah, For Good.
Yeah.
And are they both from Chicago?
No.
No.
All That Jazz from Chicago and For Good's from Wicked.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
It's got some pretty tricky harmonies in it as well, which they've picked up so quickly.
Yeah.
I'm not going to ask you to sing, unless you want to. I mean, if you just feel, we can turn the mics off.
I think people should come and pay to see our show.
That's a fair point.
And they can come and see these amazing performers.
That's a fair point. Now, when you first started to learn all this then, was it really hard on the voices to learn all these different styles? Did you find you're stretching your vocal range?
A lot of the songs are different, and the different ranges and stuff.
Yeah, and we've been singing constantly for 2 months after not doing anything at all.
Yeah.
To singing constantly for 2 months, and it strains a lot, but it's
for a few
good.
Hours.
Yeah, and are there a lot of you in the cast? What sort of numbers are we talking?
I think we started with a massive cast, and it's sort of dwindled a lot as the weeks have gone by, because it's a hard schedule to keep up with.
Yeah.
But I think the ones that we've been left with, there's about 35 students who've been left over, and those people are really, really dedicated.
I've got Janine, Susie and Georgia with me. It's because we've been talking about the shows and everything. It's very exciting, isn't it?
It is.
Might have just actually, we were just about to cover the subject that you're in need of help for this production go ahead, aren't you? Because of the historical problems that you've had.
Yeah, I mean, when I arrived at the school, I didn't realise that we had absolutely no budget to do anything in terms of shows and things. So I took on this massive project. I've got all the kids excited about it. And then I realised we have no money for lighting, for sound, for costumes, for props.
Wow.
Yeah.
And we're up against a bit of a deadline now as well, aren't we?
It is a massive deadline, and I'm not going to let these kids down. I'm going to do everything in my power to make this the best show possible. And I've said to them, if we can't get the money, we will do it by candlelight, but we are determined to do it. Obviously, it'd be nice if we could have some lights.
Well, that's...
some sound.
Yeah. Okay, so we're looking for people who've got money.
Yeah.
Or portable equipment that we can get out to you.
Yeah.
Which you can borrow for a couple of nights, obviously set up and take down afterwards. So.
Yeah, I mean, really basic things. I need 10 black wooden chairs that the girls can dance on, and I can't find any anywhere from any hire company. So that would be cool.
But there's got to be a cafe. There's got to be a cafe in Cambridge who's got, hang on a minute, downstairs we've got a whole load of those. Remember those old chairs we replaced? There's got to be 10 chairs that doesn't matter if anything happens to them.
Absolutely.
Okay.
And I will look after them and give them back in perfect condition.
Fair enough. Okay, so have you got a really an authoritative list of the stuff you need? Because what I really want people to do is to hit the phones and hit the email to you and say, right, okay, what can we do to help?
I could do with some money for costumes.
Right.
And I can do with some money to help towards the lights and the sound.
Okay, on the subject of costumes then, you, if someone said, well, look, I'm a seamstress, or we do these things, if someone can knock stuff up, anything like that.
40 circle skirts for the 50s number we're doing for You Can't Stop the Beat would be great.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay, so how can people get in touch with you now, immediately, because we need your help?
They can get hold of me at the Manor School.
Right.
I don't know the phone number of that.
Nothing like preparation. And that is nothing like preparation. Okay, I'll make sure we get you that number in just a second.
That would be awesome, thank you.
Right. Email addresses?
It's jhornsby, that's H-O-R-N-S-B-Y, at manorcc.org.uk.
Okay. That sounds about right. and I'm just manorcc.org.uk. Here we go. Just going through, trying to find the number. No, that'd be too easy, wouldn't it?
website.
Yeah, well, it's not on here. There we go.
It should be.
Let's have a look. Yeah, we'll find that in a second. Okay. Useful information. They won't have the phone number under useful information.
They will.
Really. Look at that. There it is. There we are. Look at that. It's 01223 508742. That's 01223 508742 is the number that you can ring. Okay. So the other thing which you are doing is you're actually fundraising yourselves, aren't you?
Yeah, we've done a few events in school. We've managed to raise about £100 on our own so far, just from a small event in school. We're doing a much bigger event tomorrow.
Okay, tell us about that.
So that's going to be starting at 6 o'clock in the JD Hall at the Manor School. And it's going to be some musical numbers being put on by some of the students. We're going to be selling some things that we've made, some cakes and some key rings and bits and pieces.
Wow.
Yeah, it's going to be a good little event, I think.
Okay, so people can just come along, chip in a few quid, all goes into the pots.
Yeah, but a nail art going on and some transferable tattoos and all sorts of things, so it'll be nice for kids, and we'll be selling tickets for the show as well.
Excellent. Yeah. I'm going to throw a little bit of a lifeline, not a lifeline, that's not what I'm looking for, but I'm going to offer you the chance, and I haven't cleared this with anybody, so we've just got it on tape. They're just going to have to say, well, Neil said, and I think on Friday, are you around?
What, we can make a plan.
Yeah, okay. we can be around.
Because it's Comic Relief on Friday, and Cambridge 105 has an outside broadcast van which goes out around the city. We're starting at the Trumpington Park and Ride with the breakfast show on Friday. Now, it's to raise money for Comic Relief, but I think if we make a very specific point that alongside that, that if you're able to come along and you're able to perform, you're going to sing for your suppers and do stuff like that, that money that you raise is for you.
That would be good.
Would that be okay?
Yeah, it'd be amazing.
You're going to have to do the singing. I mean, you're the ones.
Normally they don't stop, really, so...
Might be a little chilly out there.
Everyone got annoyed with us and walked away because we didn't stop singing in the green room.
Yeah, we did.
Really?
Quite annoying.
Okay. So you need to think about your songs, and I'm going to put you in touch with the team who are organising the outside broadcast. I'm sure you'll be live on Cambridge 105 during the course of the day, and hopefully people will be able to do it through Just... I mean, have you got anything like a Just Giving site, anything like that?
No, I don't think we do.
Well, maybe we can help you out on something like that.
That'd be awesome.
Take donations or something.
That'd be great.
If anybody's listening, I'm sorry if I've just put you in the book. You'll be fine. You'll work it out. You're good. You're all grown up people. You'll be okay. You'll be fine. But that might be a good way of doing it.
Yeah.
So, and if you see us around, if you see Cambridge 105 roundabout on Friday and you want to, you know, you think, oh, do you know, I can't get money to these people any other way, then give it to us, but say, no, look, this is for the Manor School.
Yeah, that'll be really helpful.
And we'll make sure that money comes through to you because I love your enthusiasm. I mean, I'm not being funny, but I've got kids and he's, oh, yeah. Oh, I want to do that. Yeah, I really want to do that.
I'd rather be at school than home. Doing the fundraising actually gave us something to do.
We try to stay as long as possible. We would do anything as long as possible.
Can I just say as well? I can see it in your faces. You're so keen about this, aren't you?
Yeah.
You really want
to do this, and it'd be such a shame if you can't.
Yeah.
And is that the bottom line at the end of the day? I know you say you'll do it with candlelight, but you.
I want this to be a spectacular show to get everyone in the school back on board with drama.
It's got to be done, isn't it?
It's got to be done.
Okay.
Hopefully, if we pull it off, then more people will join us as well.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, listen, it's lovely to hear the energy. I'm sure you're going to get there, but if people want to help, if you haven't got time to write down any of those details, then just text us here in the studio, email us. Our text number, as always, 07919 070490, studio@cambridge105.fm is the email address. If you need our contact details, do just get in touch with us here and we'll put those details through, and we'll make sure that we put the two of you in touch. So if you're driving along in your car or you're stuck on the A14, don't worry about it. But if you can write those numbers down, it's 01223 508 742 is the phone number for the Manor School. You should ask for Janine. And Janine, your email address is
jhornsby@manorcc.org.uk.
There you go. That's easily done. So we've got those details here in the studio. If you can help in any way at all, if you've got equipment they can borrow, if you're willing to chip in with chairs, with helping making dresses, anything, or if you just want to give them some money, then please do get in touch with us here at Cambridge 105, or get in touch with Janine direct. And just a reminder again of when this Best of Broadway is going to be on.
Go on, girls, tell us.
26th and 27th of March
at 7 till 8:20.
It's going to run all night.
It's going to be great.
You're going to have encore after encore.
Absolutely.
Well done. I'm sure it's going to be fantastic. We'll see you on Friday.
Thank you.
That's going to be fun.
Yep.
There you go. Well done. That's Susie, Georgia and Janine. They're all from the Manor School in Arbury. We'd love your help if you can get in touch with us here in the studio. Six, and as we mentioned earlier on, earlier in the week on Flavour, one of the most popular or familiar voices on Flavour in recent months has been Carrie Pavitt of Pavitt's Pies. But the seemingly successful business has become a victim of its own success, as Carrie told Alan Alder.
Carrie, can you just remind us, when did you actually start doing pies?
It was back in September 2011. I'd been working for Cambridge Assessment for 13 years and I was looking for a new challenge. And the challenge was going to be running my own business. Then it was going to be pies. So I spent about 9 months doing market research and recipe testing, and on the basis of that and the fantastic results I got, I decided to go ahead with the business in September 2011.
Right. How do you go about doing market research? What, making pies? And
there was various different elements. It was confirming that there was what I thought was a gap in the market, and so kind of looking what other producers there were in the area, the quality of the products that were being produced, did I think there was something missing, those kind of things, to just try and understand who was already operating in the market, so to speak. Then it was a case of looking at the recipes, because it's kind of choosing the right pastry, choosing the right fillings, and then doing kind of sort of feedback sessions. So we went to the Portland Arms during one of their beer festivals and were selling pie in a pint and getting people to fill out feedback cards, and based on that kind of information, kind of worked out and looked at the numbers and then decided to go ahead with business.
Have you any idea how many pies you've made?
Oh, I haven't totaled up in the last few months, but for example, I know I did 1,000 pies in 7 days in the week leading up to Christmas, which was a very busy time.
That's an extraordinary
I've made
number.
Quite a few.
Yeah. what are the most popular pies, would you say?
It actually varied quite a lot, really, because we had 6 different fillings plus a couple of seasonal variations. Actually, there wasn't a kind of set favourite. Beef and ale was always popular and something people would try first because they love their beef and ale. Chicken and mushroom was another obvious one after we won gold at the British Pie Awards last April. And then some of the slightly unusual ones as well. So the meat eaters loved pork and chorizo. Pavitt's Pie Moza was an absolute favourite with vegetarians and meat eaters alike. So that was quite interesting to find out.
So why have you stopped?
It was a case of looking, after having 12 full months on the calendar, looking at our books and really seeing where the sales were and that kind of thing, and reviewing the numbers. As you with any business, you really have to keep a close eye on how the figures are working and what money is coming in and out. And we then started to sort of look at different scales, because the demand has been absolutely fantastic and everybody's going, why are you stopping? But it's actually a case of coming down to the numbers, the margins that we were working with, because of the quality of the ingredients, we were having to pay a premium price for those, which helped with the flavour of the pie and why people love them so much. At the same time, it's them going, right, it's not sustainable as it is. I'm making pies on my own. Demand is outstripping supply. What can I do to expand it? And then trying to look at those models and then seeing what kind of returns we'd get from them. And unfortunately, again, because of the margins, it wasn't a scalable product, really.
Why? Because you'd need bigger premises and...
Yes, the investment you would need to make. There's quite a lot of equipment involved. If you get premises, you need kind of extraction units. You've got heightened environmental health regulations because you're working with meat products and those kind of things. So there's a lot of different things. And then you're equipment if you're going to market, if you're having market stalls and stuff, and making that work. There was a lot of different investment.
Yeah. Some people talk about sharing facilities, don't they? Like sharing facilities with a baker because the ovens are there, but they're not operating all the time. That wasn't a possibility.
Unfortunately, there still was going to be the overheads, which, because I've been running from a domestic kitchen, I hadn't had early on. So that was a bit of a kind of sort of false economy, really, kind of seeing what was happening with the prices and sales. But yeah, people operate at different times, but sometimes there's for example, working with cake makers are often looking for kitchens to share because they're only doing it a couple of times a week. But then environmental health aren't too excited about meat products being in a kind of sort of non-meat product environment kind of thing. So yeah, there's lots of different things to kind of sort of consider. So yes, we looked at every kind of different opportunity, really. Unfortunately, it was a case of coming down to the investment.
Well, it sounds like hard work. I mean, I'm sure it has had its pleasures, but, you know, what are the pleasures in making pies?
It's very true. It has working on your own, trying to keep up with demand has been long, long days.
Yeah.
And it is hard work because hand-making flaky pastry is a labour of love in itself. But in terms of joys, I think every time you hear someone rave about how wonderful they've just tried one of my pies and it's up on Twitter and stuff like this, and it's like, blimey, that's really kind of sort of heartwarming, just to think that something you believe in, people feel the same way about. And kind of, I've had all sorts of stories about how people who've never eaten a pie in their life, but because they don't like too much pastry, suddenly kind of falling in love with my pies for all sorts of things.
Yes, well, I remember when you sent some to us in the flavour studio and we sort of tried them on air, and they were a revelation. You know, it is true. They were fantastic pies.
Yeah, I suppose that's the really sad element to having to kind of sort of say that I won't be carrying on the business, really, is because the demand is there and people are real fans. And you kind of just sort of look at my Facebook page and my Twitter feed, and it's just been amazing, the response since I made the announcement, how much people really enjoyed my pies. So yeah, that's going to be the sad bit, really.
But you're also part of the Cambridge food community, which is it's quite a lively and growing community,
and that's
isn't it?
Been a fantastic part. So obviously the kind of really exciting running your own business and having kind of being able to control the different elements and make those decisions has been fantastic, but actually working with other small independent businesses in the Cambridge area and being part of the Cambridge food scene, which is really kind of buzzing and thriving at the moment, that has been really enjoyable, and I wouldn't change that. And I'd like to keep on working in that kind of environment.
So do you think you will be? Have you got any plans?
I hope so.
I'm
kind of looking around at the moment. I'm trying to make sure that I've tidied up the business and kind of sort of finished that off nicely. I've got one last event as part of Eat Cambridge. Then kind of, once I've done that, kind of looking around and seeing what to do next, really. I'm looking for a new challenge again, possibly keeping working for myself or kind of definitely keeping the food scene.
Yes, in the food scene. Good. Well, we'll look forward to it, right? And have you got any advice for people who are starting up in the food scene?
I would say do your research thoroughly, be honest with your numbers and check your figures on a regular basis, because at the end of the day, that's what's going to keep the business going. And to make some decisions based on those, don't kind of sort of go with your heart. Sometimes you've got to be realistic and go over the head and look at the figures. But I definitely not dissuade people from doing it. I think it's a fantastic, there's so much going on, there's people who are really passionate about it and so many different businesses, and it's been great from my point of view to work with other local producers to supply ingredients that go into my pies, from my meat to the ales to some of the vegetable ingredients coming from just down the road. It's just been wonderful, and that kind of community network is really valuable. So being part of that and helping each other grow is a really strong part to it. But look back at what you're going to do. Do some good research and make sure that you're clear what you're about to do.
Well, thanks very much, Carrie, and we look forward to your next venture.
Oh, thank you. Thank you very much for your support over the last 2 years. It's been really appreciated.
Thanks.
There we go. That's Alan Alder talking to Carrie Pavitt of Pavitt's Fies. And you can catch Flavour fortnightly between 12 and 1 here on Community Radio in your city, Cambridge 105. 21 minutes before 6. Travel coming up in a minute. First off, on here's one of my favourites from the moment, Little Big Town, coming up next. Community Radio.